This episode of To the Journey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
Hi, I'm Manuente Reme. I played Icheb on Star Trek Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
I think it's safe to say that no one on this crew has been more obsessed with getting home than I have. But when I think about everything we've been through together, maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey. And if that journey takes a little longer, so we can do something we all believe in, I can't think of any place I'd rather be, or any people I'd rather be with.
To the journey.
You're here.
Journey. Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is To the Journey. I'm your co-host, Zachary Frueling, and with me, as always, is...
Suzanne Williamson.
Well, today, we're going to be talking about our most and our least favorite Neelix moments in Star Trek Voyager. But to make things interesting, we decided to split these lists up into two different lists. And Suzanne, you are going to take the best Neelix moments, and I am going to take the worst Neelix moments in Star Trek Voyager. And we're going to compare our lists, our opposing lists.
You're such a negative Neelix.
I know. I've been accused of that. Oh, bother. Yeah, how did I end up having to take the negative list? I must have drawn the short end of the isolinear chip or something.
I thought we did rock, paper, scissors.
I think this is kind of fun, actually, Suzanne, because most of the time I'm the one going, no, I actually really kind of like that. And you're like, I hate that. So I'm taking the negative position this time.
Wait a minute. That makes me sound like I hate everything. I don't.
You're like, I hate Neelix. I hate Endgame. I hate whatever.
I do not hate Neelix. And yes, I do hate Endgame. Most people do. And for good reason, because they cheated us. They cheated us.
I know you're not as negative as I just made you out to be, Suzanne. I really know.
It's okay. You can call me Negative Neelix.
I still like podcasting with you, even when you go negative on me.
Well, I hope so, because you're kind of stuck with me. Not going yes. Anywhere.
50 years from now, we're going to be podcasting together still.
That's the most depressing thing I've heard all week.
So this will be interesting, because I've always liked Neelix. Neelix does not generally, as a rule, bother me. So it was a lot of work for me to sit down and think, what do I really not like about Neelix? What are some Neelix moments or some Neelix mannerisms that I don't like? And you, I don't feel like you're excited about Neelix. Like, maybe you tolerate Neelix.
No.
Maybe you...
No, I like Neelix.
You are Team Neelix.
I like Neelix.
Okay. I misunderstood.
He's definitely up above Harry, which... to be honest, doesn't take much to be up above Harry.
That's another example. You're always like, I hate Harry. No, we know you don't hate
it's
Harry.
It's not yet. That I hate Harry.
I know.
He just annoys me.
We've covered this. This is old territory.
Yeah.
I guess my point was just that it was hard for me to come up with a negative list because I generally like Neelix. And I had assumed that maybe Neelix was, like I said, he's not your favorite character. He's above Harry Kim for you, right? So It might be a little more work for you to come up with things you really like about Neelix versus things you don't like about Neelix.
No, they came pretty quick to me.
Okay.
Are we going to start with the negative or the positive? Are we going to intermix? How are we doing?
No,
this?
We should mix it up a little bit. We'll go back and forth.
Are we doing it chronologically or just whatever moments we wrote down first?
No, we'll just do them in the order that they came to us in.
Okay.
Why don't you go first? Let's start off on a positive note. We don't want to go too negative onto the journey. We're going to keep it positive to start, at least to start.
Okay.
You go first.
Well, my first one will have to be Bath Time Neelix.
Yes, I love bathtime Neelix. Come on,
we're introduced to him, and he's just in the bath, and the water's everywhere, and he's having fun. Who doesn't love bathtime Neelix? Except for Tuvok.
I love that he pours his drinking water into the bathtub.
He does. Well, it's all water. It doesn't matter. It would be weird if he drank from the bathtub. Then bathtime Neelix wouldn't be as fun.
I love that he didn't even really know what a bath was. That's my favorite setup for that whole scene. Bath.
Going to soak in the water. Yeah. Good times. Good times with bathtime Neelix.
And they bookend the scene nicely with Tuvok having to hand Neelix a towel.
You would think Tuvok would have called upon a junior officer to take care of that.
Doesn't the security chief have better things to do?
You would think. I mean, the least he could have done is given Neelix like a rubber ducky to have in the tub with him. Everybody needs a rubber ducky.
What do Vulcans use instead of rubber ducks? They don't have ducks on Vulcan, presumably. They have...
Yeah, I don't know what Vulcan children would use as tubby toys. That's a good question.
I love the way in which this whole sequence, starting in the transporter room when the Mr. Vulcan shtick starts, to bath time Neelix and Tuvok having to hand him a towel, it sets up this whole back and forth comedy routine with Tuvok and Neelix that persists through all of Voyager, and it all starts with bath time Neelix.
Or it starts with the hug.
Good to meet you. How was that? Did I do a good Neelix?
That was a very good Neelix, actually. All right. I will not attempt to do that.
Yes, I think almost everyone can agree bath time Neelix is in the win column.
Yes.
Well, while we're talking about season one Neelix, one of the things that bothers me about season one Neelix is the way in which they kind of turn him into an ultra animated caricature of the Swedish chef inside the mess hall. When he's got the hat on and he's got all his dishes flying. It should be just as funny as bath time Neelix, but bath time Neelix for me works a heck of a lot better than Swedish chef Neelix.
Well, I'm just glad that we can understand what Neelix is saying, unlike the Swedish chef.
It would have been funnier if he was just pork, pork, pork all the time. No, really, it's I get what they were going for. It was supposed to be a little bit of comic relief, and yet it just falls so flat for me, and I roll my eyes every single time that scene comes up when he's, you know, messing around in the kitchen and things are flying everywhere with his hat on for the first time.
And the flames are up to his eyebrows.
Exactly. It is funny and it does get a chuckle out of me, but it also makes me just roll my eyes like, what were they thinking to start a brand new show off with this kind of ridiculousness?
Yeah, it was a bit over the top, to say the least.
In a way, it did set the tone for Voyager. Voyager delves into the ridiculous in ways that other Star Trek series don't so much. And, you know, it planted that kind of thing planted the seeds for things that would become great things, like doing the Captain Proton, the really weird stuff that Voyager ended up doing. And it all starts with, you know, this is going to be a lighthearted, fairly ridiculous show in some ways. And not be afraid to be funny.
Yes, especially with Neelix's better than coffee substitute.
Exactly. I think that tone was set very early on with bath time Neelix and with Swedish chef Neelix. I just think bath time Neelix is funnier.
No, I just want to see Swedish chef in Neelix's clothes. I really want to see that. That'd be awesome.
Well, you can take that as your Photoshop challenge for the thumbnail artwork for this week's episode.
Oh, no way.
Photoshop it, Suzanne. Photoshop it.
Thanks, I'll pass. Hard pass.
Maybe some Photoshop adept listener out there will throw us a bone and Photoshop this for us.
Take pity on us.
So, do you agree with my pick on this one? Do you roll your eyes when you see Swedish Chef Neelix?
No, I actually don't roll my eyes when I see him.
Interesting.
I kind of like him. He makes me giggle, although it makes me groan when he introduces Leola Root and that turns into the running joke.
So the contrast between these two is interesting. Bath time Neelix is funny. Swedish Chef Neelix doesn't seem to bother you as much as it bothers me. I still think it's funny, no. And it still does make me chuckle, but it makes me groan a little more than it makes you groan. And I think that's the kind of basic dichotomy that people have with Neelix in general, right? Some people love Neelix. Some people hate Neelix. He makes people laugh sometimes. He makes people groan sometimes. And it's different for different viewers, but there is this kind of dichotomy with Neelix. There's a love-hate relationship with some of the comedy they tried with Neelix.
Well, there's a lot more to Neelix than just comedy routine. I mean, there's more to him than just the lighthearted stuff that we see. Because once you get to the episode, which is next on my list, Mortal Coil, we see that there's a lot more going on with Neelix. We get to see some of the Talaxian customs with Prixen. We get to see how much emphasis is placed on family through Prixen. And then we also get to see the Guiding Tree, which is something that, you know, Talaxians go to when they die and they meet their family there and so on and so forth. But then when Neelix dies and he doesn't see all of this or the Great Forest, and he has to deal with all of those emotions and pretty much everything that he was taught and knew didn't come to fruition, that cemented that character to me as powerful. I mean, he's going through things that I could understand and I could identify with.
I think this is such an important episode for Neelix because of the way in which they set him up with as a comedic character, the things we just talked about, the love-hate relationship with the comedy routine. There was a need to give him something to care about, like what drives him internally. And I think Mortal Coil is such an important episode for establishing the kinds of things Neelix cares about. He cares about his beliefs. He cares about his family. Mm-hmm. And all of this depth to him is set up inside that episode.
Oh, absolutely. And he gets to make a medicine bundle with Chakotay and go on a vision quest. I love that.
I want to make a medicine bundle and go on a vision quest with Chakotay.
Get in line. And the line starts behind me.
We should make that our goal for this year, Suzanne. We should we should make medicine bundles and try to go on a vision quest.
Oh, I thought you were going to say track down Robert Beltran and try and go on a vision quest.
To make medicine bundles with us?
I'll show up with my bundle and be like, hello.
He might actually show up for that.
No, he'll be like, security.
You could message him. Say, hey, you know, we know you get a lot of fan requests, but we were actually kind of wondering if you'd like to come make medicine bundles with us. One afternoon over tea or something.
That would be amazing.
It might be the most interesting request he's got all year, and he might actually show up. You never know. This is a bit of a tangent, but that's okay. We do that on To the Journey. Do you remember that episode of The Big Bang Theory when LeVar Burton gets invited to a party and he actually shows up?
I've never seen the show.
You've never seen The Big Bang Theory, really? Well, no. There's this episode where the main characters, Sheldon and Leonard, are going to have a party at their apartment. And they are Twitter friends with LeVar Burton and they invite him to the party. And he actually shows up to their party.
That would be kind of cool.
So, you never know. You don't know until you ask, right?
That is very true. The worst he can tell me is no, stop contacting me.
No, and here's your restraining order. Say, I get medicine bundle requests all the time.
You crazy people, leave me alone.
Enough with the medicine bundles already. Don't even get me started on vision quests.
I was going to say, how about some whittling lessons?
When I was in college doing my undergraduate work in philosophy, I took a philosophy course on Native American spirituality. And I remember thinking these very things like, I actually want to kind of sit in a sweat ceremony and have a vision quest.
I was a part of a sweat lodge in Florida.
What was your experience like while we're talking about this tangent?
I sweat a lot and I almost passed out. That was about it.
No visions of note?
No, I didn't have any visions, but I was thrilled just to have been a part of the process. It was wonderful, and I met some amazing people and had so much fun.
See, now we need to do this. I need to get up to speed. I need to do the sweat lodge thing, and we need to make medicine bundles.
Yes, let's do this.
Actually, this sounds like a topic for a future To the Journey episode. We will make our medicine bundles together in an episode of To the Journey. What do you think?
Only if we can get Robert Beltran to join us.
This is a really interesting idea. If we can get Robert on the show and we make our medicine bundles in real time together.
I would be so down for that.
I would too. I would clear my whole calendar for that.
I'd have my little Chakotay sitting next to me at the same time doing it.
With making a miniature medicine bundle?
Yes. Which would probably scare away Robert and, you know.
Probably.
Like, this chick is crazy. I forgot an appointment I have. See ya.
Like, oh, and I brought your miniature. He's going to make a medicine bundle too. Like, okay. I think this is a great idea. Even if we don't get Robert Beltran on the show, we should make an episode about making our medicine bundles. I think that's a great idea.
Well, I would like to know some listener suggestions as to what we should have in our medicine bundles.
It sounds like a lot like preparing for a camping trip. Like, what what would you bring in? No, that's not the idea of a medicine bundle. These should be, you know, significant items, not necessarily practical items, right?
I understand that, but I think our listeners might think of some things that should be significant to us that we might not think about.
We can see how much our listeners know us, I guess.
Probably, yeah.
Or we can guess each other's medicine bundles. That would be even weirder.
Are we really supposed to know what's in each other's medicine bundles? Is that too intimate?
We've been doing this for a while, Suzanne. I have some idea of what's in your medicine bundle.
I'm sure most people do.
I've got a couple ideas. I feel like they missed an opportunity to put the Talaxian fur fly in Neelix's medicine bundle.
I think the fur fly is a little large to go in the medicine bundle.
It's more like a medicine backpack.
Yeah, that fly is huge. That's something you'd see in, like, if you play video games, you would see that in Fallout coming at you instead of a blood bug.
Yeah, the fur fly is the state bird of Talaxia.
So is it a bird or is it a fly? Which is it?
That's an awfully big bug. You're right. I never really thought about how big it actually is. Can you imagine one of those things coming at you?
That'd be scary. There is not a fly swatter big enough to take care of that.
Wait, are all the insects on Talax that big?
Gosh, I hope not. That'd be super creepy. Imagine the spider that would be big enough to eat that fly. I'm not going anywhere near that planet.
It's like being in Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Remember the giant ant?
It is. Oh, that means Rick Moranis is there. Yay!
Yes, your favorite. And we're all the way back to Rick Moranis as a Talaxian. Okay.
If Rick Moranis is there, then I'm going to show up.
Okay, so we're not just inviting Robert Beltran, we're inviting Rick Moranis to make medicine bundles with us. Okay. Well, you've got quite a list, don't you?
I do. And it's a very eclectic list.
Apparently. It has Robert Beltran and Rick Moranis, yes. So yeah, I think it was really important to establish some depth with Neelix after having set him up as essentially a comedic character, and Mortal Coil is a great episode for doing that. You know, he had to have something to care about besides just cooking food and Leola root and
Kes.
Yeah, caring about Kes just wasn't enough to carry Neelix through 7 seasons, right? And of course, Kes didn't last that many seasons, but that was not enough to make Neelix an interesting character.
Yeah. Even when he got Naomi. I mean, yeah, that was cute. He's taking care of the little girl, but he still needed more depth. And this delivered in the depth.
And Samantha Wildman was quite an absentee parent. Like, where did she go? She was gone. What was she doing for all these years?
I think her parenting idol was Beverly Crusher.
Apparently.
And I love Beverly, but wow, yeah. That is not a hands-on parent.
Just let the captain and Riker take care of it.
He'll be okay.
Two men and a Wesley.
So is Steve Guttenberg in that one? I haven't seen it.
It is kind of funny the way in which Beverly is, you're right, she really is, I know we're supposed to be talking about Voyager, but Beverly Crusher is really hands-off when it comes to Wesley, and like the rest of the crew is so active with Wesley. It's really interesting.
I guess she figured she didn't need to be hands-on because Geordi was there, Picard was there.
Good role models through and through.
Mm-hmm.
Even Worf gives him advice.
She was busy with her doctoring.
This is something that never really made sense to me about Neelix as it relates to Naomi Wildman. Samantha Wildman is gone a lot. Voyager's just not that big of a ship. She can't be that far away. Why does she have to be such an absentee parent? Why does Neelix have to play such an active role? It's really interesting to me.
Do we even really know what Samantha Wildman does? On the ship, she's a science officer. That's all we know. Maybe she's the only one in her department.
So she works a lot of overtime?
Yes, because there's no one else there.
Yeah, we don't really know exactly what her job is, right?
No.
What do you do if you're the only person in the department? Like, say the other person in the department who ran the department got killed in Caretaker, and so she's the one-person show in her department. You can't work 24 hours around the clock, right? So.
No, I guess maybe she works 12-hour shifts. I don't know. Or maybe she works double shifts, which would be really tough when she was pregnant. Oh, my goodness.
Or she just likes to party hard in the holodeck after work.
I can't go back to that kid anymore. Oh my gosh.
Exactly.
She's growing so fast. She was a little baby and now she's like...
Neelix will be fine. Where's my martini? So most of the Neelix moments that I don't like are the early seasons of Neelix, because I think Neelix does become a character with a lot of depth and a lot of caring, and they tone down the comedy routine a little bit in later seasons. So a lot of my Neelix annoyances are early Neelix. And one of the things that really bugs me in early seasons, and I know it's part of the comedy routine and it's very intentional and it's okay, but whenever Neelix pretends to know something about what is coming in the next sector of space, when really he doesn't know anything at all about it, when he's pretending to know something about what's down the road, that makes me roll my eyes every single time.
It makes me think of my father, and his line was always, baffle them with BS. And that is what Neelix is doing.
Yeah, that's it. He's a total BSer. And that's part of his character, and we know that from the very beginning, and they write him that way. But it also just makes me go, really? Haven't they caught on to the fact that he doesn't have any idea what he's doing after a week?
No. Captain Janeway still believes him. She's like, okay, Neelix said this.
You think after a couple times of like, okay, Neelix said to go here and look how that worked out, that they would become a little more skeptical than they do after a few episodes.
Yeah. No. They got no one else. And he said he was a guide. So what are they going to do?
That's true. They've got nothing else. It's Neelix or bust.
So we'll take this person that's pretending he knows what's going on, and then we'll work with it. At least once he has to be correct.
Sometimes Neelix doesn't pretend. Sometimes Captain Janeway will ask him, Neelix, do you know anything about this planetary system? And he'll go, no, not particularly. And he'll kind of, you know, show his ignorance. And that actually works for me a little better than when he's BSing. But I know it's just part of the character, and it works. But
no, I don't know anything about this planet, but here's some appetizers.
But have a canopy. I think with Neelix, the problem was that some of the early things they did with the character weren't going to last for the long term. The comedy routine, for example, was not going to be enough with Neelix. Neelix as a guide was not going to be enough because it becomes implausible really quickly. You know, they keep going farther and farther and farther in space, and Neelix can't be a guide. And that does create a little bit of comedy routine, but that just only gets you so far with the character. And, I don't know if it bothers me so much because it is part of the character's growth to move beyond being a guide to being something else to the crew and having meaningful friendships and relationships, but...
And making himself an ambassador.
Yeah, we wouldn't have had Ambassador Neelix if he hadn't gone through this. Exactly. And I find Ambassador Neelix a lot more interesting than Neelix the guide who doesn't really know where he's going.
Ambassador Neelix was fun, especially when he knew how to talk to the Tac-Tac and... The captain did not.
Yes. Do not put your hands on your hip. So this wasn't a moment so much. It's not a particular instance with Neelix. It's just a thing they did with a character that worked once or twice, but they really made it drag on a little too long for my taste.
They were trying to milk it a little too much.
A little too much Neelix the tour guide, yes. Now, Neelix the cruise director I like. Neelix the guide, not so much.
Is he the gopher of Voyager?
Well, like in the resort program, he's essentially the cruise director.
I don't remember ever seeing Gopher's naked feet.
Wait, who's Gopher?
On the Love Boat.
Oh, I haven't watched the Love Boat since I was a really little kid. I never really watched it, so I didn't know the character. I remember the Love Boat when I was a little kid. My mom used to like watching the Love Boat. Now I kind of want to watch the Love Boat. I remember the theme music. Vividly, but...
The Love Boat.
Yes. That could only come from that time period. Yes. The Love Boat.
Oh, wait a minute. Neelix would be a combination of Gopher and Isaac the bartender.
Again, I have to take your word for it because I can't really remember the show other than the theme music. I love this mashup we have going with Neelix, where sometimes Neelix is the Swedish chef, bork, 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 and sometimes he's the cruise director, and sometimes he's the bartender, and from the Love Boat, no less.
He's the jack of all trades and master of none.
Well, he says as much in Caretaker, right? You need something, I'll find it. So yeah, that's my second pick. Neelix as a guide is only marginally successful for me.
Do we want to end the episode on negative Neelix or positive Neelix?
You think I should get my next negative pick out of the way so we can end on a positive note? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, we're going to end on a high note.
That's so saccharine of you, Suzanne.
Oh, come on. Everybody's going to love what I have to say next. I know they are.
I never knew you were such a softie.
I'm not a softie. I just want to have that last hurrah with my next pick.
Okay. So I will get my next negative pick out of the way then. I cannot stand crazy jealous Neelix when it comes to Kes, when he starts getting crazy jealous about Kes and Tom.
Yeah. That gets old really, really, really fast.
Well, it gets old for Kes really, really fast, too.
It gets old for everybody really, really fast. Especially Tom when he gets attacked with hair pasta.
Well, it's hard to watch because he's getting so crazy irrational about it.
Well, because he knows he's a little out of his league.
Well, that's true. Can't argue with that.
Yeah. That and he was robbing the cradle to begin with, so...
He seems to have more fun with the Klingon women when they were on the ship.
Well, he could let his hair down, so to speak, and be himself instead. Well,
yeah, Kes kind of made him uptight, actually, in an interesting way.
All the cutesy names, sweeting and all that. Yeah, it didn't seem very Neelix to me.
Yeah, I think you're right. Shedding that whole persona really allowed the Neelix character to be more grounded and more relatable.
Yes.
And he desperately needed it after Swedish Chef.
That, and who wants to watch a show with this really outrageous, jealous guy all the time? Nobody wants to see that.
Well, it got progressively worse. There was always a little bit of that. And then, you know, it became kind of this spiral that Neelix would go into. He became really kind of possessive, crazy, jealous. Yeah. And no one likes that. So
that's not good TV.
That's not good TV.
No, not at all.
It's not good in life. It's not good on TV.
So, I mean, really, if you're getting that jealous over someone, the relationship you're in isn't working for you.
Now, I do think the pasta throwing was worth it.
The hair pasta?
Yes.
You just wanted a food fight in the mess hall, that's all.
I'm surprised we don't see more of them, actually, with all that food just sitting there, you know, waiting to be thrown.
Because Chell has had a talk with everyone and convinced them it's not worth it for him to clean up afterwards.
Guys, help me out here. I have to clean up after your food fights.
Have pity on poor Chell.
I love that we've retconned Chell to be the guy who cleans up all the messes on Voyager. Poor Chell. Neelix gets really crazy about it, like analyzing every little word that Kes says, like when she says to Tom, "I'll be over here if you need me." And he says, "Did you hear what she said? I'll be over here if you need me."
And stresses the word need.
If you need me. And he can kind of see the wheels spinning inside his mind about what that means. And yeah, he's crazy jealous. Not good. Not good. So of those three things, crazy jealous Neelix probably bothers me the worst. And I saved it for the last because we were talking about Season 1 Neelix to start with. But of the three, crazy jealous Neelix has got to go.
Yeah, he's the one that I could most do without myself, too.
No, I wouldn't take it out of the show. I think it's an important part of the transition of the Neelix character from being a character I didn't like as much to a character that I really kind of embraced as a deep character. But it bothers me every time I watch it.
I could have totally done without jealous Neelix.
Like you would strip it from the show altogether.
He could have had a perfectly fine relationship with Kes without showing the insane jealousy.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. It would be a better relationship that way, absolutely.
I mean, even if she moved on with Tom or whoever, just that whole jealousy thing, make it go away.
So now that that's out of the way, that frees you up to end the episode on a positive note with your last pick of things to love about Neelix.
My last thing to love about Neelix is Klingon Neelix. When the Trojan take over the ship. I love Klingon Neelix. He's so much fun.
I like Klingon Neelix too.
And perhaps that's why he embraced Klingon women later on.
Could be. It was formative. A formative experience.
Because that was still kind of in his brain and he was like, hey, I enjoy being a Klingon. I might enjoy being with a Klingon woman.
It would be interesting to compare, do a little cross-pollination here and compare Klingon Neelix with Klingon Chief O'Brien from Deep Space Nine.
I thought you were going to say Klingon Janeway for a minute.
that too. But, you know, Neelix seems to really embrace being a Klingon. And Chief O'Brien, when he has to pretend to be a Klingon, doesn't really know how to do it. He's like, can I have more blood wine, please?
I think Neelix embraced it a little more because he had that thing in his brain, so he didn't know that he wasn't really a Klingon.
Well, yeah, that makes it easy to embrace it. That's true.
Mm-hmm. And hanging out with the doctor, doing Klingon things.
I love the Klingon. Now, this is something I don't know if listeners know about me. I love Klingon stuff in Star Trek. Klingon culture, Klingon mindset, Klingon everything. You name it. If it's Klingon, I like it in Star Trek. They're my favorite race by far.
One of the best parts of Klingon Neelix is when Neelix knows he's no longer Klingon and has to convince the other Klingons that we're going to go sack St. Clair. Come on, that's good times.
I think you're right, though, that there is something about the Klingon mindset that appeals to Neelix in some way. When the Klingons are actually on board, he loves it.
Mm-hmm. He does. He has fun.
Yeah, I think we hit on something here. Early Neelix, despite all of his comedy routine, was not really a fun character. It's only when he mellows out a little bit that he becomes a fun character to be around.
Mm-hmm.
Lets his hair down. He was too uptight about Kes and too much comedy.
Kes was holding him back. That's what it was.
Darn Kes, holding Neelix back. Well, as is often the case with Neelix, there are things to love and there are things to hate about Neelix. But our love-hate relationship with Neelix isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on Trek FM this past week. So here's a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Meta Treks.
You can see Gene Roddenberry playing with the idea of what we could become given our full potential. And the aliens that have achieved that, looking down and kind of criticizing or examining or evaluating humanity from a moral standpoint, almost like Q does in putting humanity on trial. There's a sense in which humanity is being judged by these morally superior aliens that are genuinely pacifists.
Or in the case of Q, genuinely narcissistic.
The Edge, a Star Trek Discovery podcast.
He's not trying to be a Starfleet officer. He doesn't care about doing that in the context of, well, because I want to prove that I'm a Starfleet officer. But I think that, and again, this is what perhaps in hindsight, after the fact, he starts to realize that who he is aligns itself or can align itself with what Starfleet stands for.
To the journey!
I was wondering why they didn't do a mind meld at the end of the episode.
Why would they do that?
Because Tressa has 90 some odd years, 94 or 96 years of life experience, and Tuvok is a Vulcan, so he can mind meld. Why wouldn't he do that?
Because there's no reason to do that. You're just going around mind-melding with people willy-nilly just because they're old and you want their knowledge? Is that what you're doing?
Yeah, it's like space genealogy.
Dude, boundaries.
Melodic Treks.
And, you know, I talked to the producers when I first did the show, and the first thing they had me do was take a combination of the dun da 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 da, you know, Sandy Courage, wonderful horn theme, and Jerry's da-da-da-da-da-da, you know, his theme for the first movie, and make a theme out of those and combine them. So I did it electronically, and they said, good enough. And I said, look, this is not my specialty. And they said, never mind, you got it. So 18 years later, you know, that was it.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all of these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on your iPhone, iPad, Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they're published. And please leave us a star rating and a written review. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and most third-party podcast apps. And you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link as well.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners-only group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field, and it'll come right up. If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose Message to a Trek FM show and select To the Journey. That will come right to us. You can also find the network on Twitter at TrekFM, and on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. Well, Zach, when you're not busy trying to figure out what's going to go into your medicine bundle, where can our listeners find you on Trek FM and on the internet?
Well, you can find me elsewhere on Trek.fm as co-host of MetaTrek's Trek FM show on Star Trek and philosophy. You can always find me in the Babel Conference if you'd like to talk about Voyager with me in there, and you're welcome to follow me on Twitter. My handle is just my name, at Zachary Fruhling. That's Zachary, Z-A-C-H-A-R-Y, Fruhling, F-R-U-H-L-I-N-G. And how about you, Suzanne? When you're not busy getting Neelix a towel, where can our listeners find you on the interwebs and around the Trek FM network?
I'm still wondering why he doesn't have a tubby toy. So can I give him a tubby toy as well as the towel?
As long as you pack it in your medicine bundle.
Okay, the tubby toy is not going in my medicine bundle. I'm sorry. I draw the line. But you can find me on Twitter. My handle is KJaneway8, and I'll occasionally pop up in the Babel Conference if you want to talk about anything in there with me.
Well, if you'd like to help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week, we invite you to become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and many more, all available through our special patrons website, the Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of time and money to produce, host, and distribute these podcasts each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us, and we hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
We do have a few people we would like to thank. First off being C. Brian Jones, the founder and publisher of Trek.fm, who is our very own Swedish chef. Executive producers Matthew Rushing and Kenneth Tripp. Aaron Harvey, our art director. Richard Marquez, our production manager. And Brandon Chamatala, our Patreon manager. And a very special thank you to our associate producers Bruce Lish, Ju Kim, Richard Marquez, Patrick Carlin, and Norman Lau. Thank you for supporting Trek FM and To the Journey.
Well, be sure to join us next time on To the Journey when we will be finding out which one of us can party like a Klingon. But until then, this has been To the Journey.